Welcome to Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Joe Cook, got Eric Nalin. We are here. The team reports this upcoming weekend. It's going to be nice to get some on-field info, but so much of the conversation this past week, Eric, had to do with off-field things, NIL, house settlement, and all that was at spring meetings in Destin, a bunch of different Texas decision-makers like interim president Jim Davis, Chris Del Conte, Sark, Sean Miller, Vic Schaefer, they were there, basically similar contingent from all the other schools. And the joke of the week was, well, have you solved all the world's problems? And answer basically from Greg Sankey and everybody else was no, but there was a lot of good information coming out of Destin about what the future of the sport looks like.
Yeah, until the last few years, I didn't really care about any of this stuff, man. I was a live and let be. Whatever happens, happens. Line up and play the games. But now this is crunch time. It's the next couple of years are so important for Texas's ability to compete at the level it's been competing the last few years. These rulings that are coming down and how Texas adapts to the new rules and the new order in college football is extremely important. You know, in the next couple of years, I think I'm going to know whether or not we're covering a team that wins eight games every year or is competing for the national championship every year. And a lot of that has to do with what happens with the house settlement and how Texas can, you know, still keep an NIL advantage and still play within the rules.
That's going to be a big deal. We're still waiting on a lot of the house settlement to be approved by Claudia Wilken. And I think if you read every single article, it's like pending approval by Judge Wilken has to be put in there. And it'll have like 500 to 1,000 words, but those four are what's holding everything up. But, you know, we also learned a little bit about how the money is going to be split. Most schools, I believe, and with this settlement, in Texas included, it goes 75% football, 15% men's basketball, 5% women's basketball, and then 5% to other sports. Something that for the all intents and purposes, you hear that $20.5 million number. The SEC is requiring $2 million of that $20.5 million to go to Alston payments. I don't know what those are, but it removes $2 million. So basically, Texas has, you know, 75% of that, you know, $18.5 million to go to football. But they're going to need to find other opportunities, Eric, outside of that, outside of that, to help them in the future.
Yeah, the math wizards out there are probably doing the math. So we're talking about $13.5 million is going to be the NIL, the 75% of the 18. Whatever, it's going to be right in that neighborhood. So if you're thinking about to win a national championship, your roster is going to have to be around 22 to 25 probably. So you're already doing that shortfall of $10 million, about $10 million. They're going to have to come up with in ways that are real NIL. Now, you know, the collectives are going away. The collectives, I think, are even done doing the fundraising. So that they're going to have to leverage all their might, and the school is going to have to be extremely smart and diligent and work hard to figure out the best relationships with all the vast companies that want access to Texas fans. Luckily, Texas has a massive fan base. A lot of the fan base is educated. A lot of the fan base makes decent money. They've got spending power. And so Texas is going to have to leverage all of its might to make sure that their NIL remains an advantage for them, because I feel very, very, very confident that the bags are going to start coming out. These schools are not going to – they're going to spend their $13 million that the schools have to come up with. But then the donors are going to go right back to doing what they've been doing traditionally. And we're going to see probably a return to the recent order of this century. Of, you know, the certain teams that were winning will probably go back to being on top unless Texas can continue to leverage NIL in a legal fashion.
And that's not just for Arch Manning and Red Bull and Vory and stuff like that. Like, there's opportunity for and for a lot of college towns, I bet this looks like the bookstore or the big restaurant or like the personal injury attorney. There are about five personal injury attorneys in Austin that have billboards and stuff like that. Like, this is a place where Texas, uniquely situated in Austin, has a lot of places they can turn to find what all these administrators like to call real NIL.
And that's you got local businesses, but you also got national business. Everybody knows, you know, Dr. Pepper and, you know, Arch has a number of national endorsements. Those are going to have to come in. But, you know, the good thing about the house settlement is, you know, more players will get more money. There will be a lift on the bottom part of the roster, I imagine. But then the staff is going to have to be very smart about how they do delegate that cash throughout the roster. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be another headache to cover, but Texas has to handle this intelligently to keep its place in the current landscape.
I do like that 75% number is going to be standard across the board. It does do, like you mentioned, it either requires corporate NIL or bags. But then it's very interesting what will happen with that last 5%. You know, we're obviously focused on football. We do men's basketball. We do like pay attention to what Vic Schaefer says, and he's excited about his team. But for Texas, it's going to present a very interesting issue because of how high they want to be in the rankings in every single sport. You've got volleyball, you've got a women's basketball, you've got softball, baseball, swimming wins national championships, good track program. Like, even though football drives everything and is the primary focus, I'm sure, for Cristel Conte, he's going to have to figure out, and then again, this is where corporate stuff comes in, how to support all those different mouths to feed with just that 5%.
Well, Del Conte made a good point. He said some schools are good at a couple of things, and they're going to overly invest in those. And Texas is good at everything, and they're going to have to try to figure out a way to keep all of them competitive. So he's exactly right on that. I think that a little bit goes a long way in a lot of those sports. And I don't anticipate any problem with Texas keeping its reputation for being great across the board, the Olympic sports and all that. But let's be serious. All that really matters is football, and that matters. I mean, for pretty much every other sport too, it's a revenue driver. I think this is what Del Conte says. It's the front porch for the school. It has to stay in its current place. Otherwise, all this was for nothing, and Texas is not, politicking and lobbying its way and using its might as it should. I feel good that Texas is going to be okay going forward, but this is a crucial point.
The other big story that was the focus of all these meetings in Destin, and is basically the one that's out in front of the public right now, has to do with the SEC and their 9-game schedule. It's one thing leads to another, leads to another. The college football playoff does not have a format or really like an agreement in place. It doesn't have a format in place past this season. So they're trying to figure out, okay, do we go to 12, unseeded, seeded again, 16, 14, all that different stuff. And until a decision's made there, the SEC is not going to decide whether they want to go to 8 games or stay at 8 games or go to 9 games. And this is where, you know, the Alabama, oddly enough, that conversation has resurfaced, talking about a difficult schedule, even though all three of their losses were to in-conference teams, including Vanderbilt. I don't know why that keeps coming up, but I think it's a way for SEC to try to point, like, we play tougher teams, so our losses have more value, our wins have more value, stuff like that. From a Texas perspective, Eric, we know where Cristel Conte and Texas has maybe not publicly come out and said, but they did that this week with how they want to approach the 9-game schedule.
Yeah, you can hear, you know, listening to that Del Conte discussion with media, it was clear that nobody came to any unanimity on any topic this week. That's why he just kept reverting back. No, we're just trying to listen and learn. That means they're buying time. They have no congruence across the landscape with the other presidents and ADs. The 9-game is, you know, we've been talking about this for years. Texas wants to go to a 9-game. Not only is it competitive, great for the fans. If it's great for the fans, it's probably great for the pocketbook, the school's pocketbook. And that's a big part of it. Del Conte mentioned something we've mentioned for years is that OU, the OU game is a road game every other year. So some years they have 4 conference home games, with one being in Dallas, and other years it's 3 conference home games with a road game in Dallas. So they're trying to make up for that lost revenue and also the fan experience of being able to go into DKR. That's a big point for them. Of course, the problem with that is that, you know, teams are looking for that extra win to try to become bowl eligible and get their an extra payday for themselves. Now, I've heard that they have the votes to get this done, but I think that Sankey wants to get it done in a way that people feel good about and that he's not forcing their hands. He doesn't have to break out the whip and get it done. It's eventually going to happen, but apparently they're not quite there yet.
Steve Sarkisian made a good point. He was asked about this, and he has input, but I don't think he's the guy who's going to be making the decision, nor will Kirby Smart, nor will the coaches probably. But he did bring up, like, it is 8 more wins, but it's 8 more losses on that schedule. And I think one of the things that Paul and Ian have talked about is we still don't know how to really handle comparing records and losses in this first year of the playoff. It's why the SMU versus Alabama and Indiana versus Alabama conversation was so confusing. But that's why I think you've seen all these different things from Sankey talking about how difficult the schedule is, more so than just the SEC media machine, but like the like putting it in writing and putting the SEC letterhead and sending out this info on how the SEC is the number one conference. I think to me that looks like they're trying to set the table for like, hey, if Alabama's 9-3, but their three losses are to Texas, Georgia, and Ole Miss by five total points, don't leave them out over a team like Indiana, who lost to the only really good team on their schedule. And it's just, it's all politics. Yeah. It's going to be really, really tough to see anything come to like a consensus in this.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be outliers. It doesn't matter what system they come up with. Eventually, there's going to be somebody that's left out or felt like they were slighted. That's just the nature of it. And they can't go so deep like basketball because there's not enough time to play the games. So that there's always going to be good teams left out. But I understand that. Yeah, Alabama was better than Indiana last year. You can't say, well, Indiana had a better record, but you have to compare who they were playing to. Outside of that Vanderbilt loss, which was bad, and Vanderbilt was a pretty good team, but Alabama found 100 different ways to lose that game. They had a pretty good team last year. You know, that was a playoff caliber team. If you're talking about 12 or 14 teams. So that's part of it, man. And you know, Sankey's doing his job. He's going to fight for his conference, and that's who pays the bills. But it's all going to figure out. The teams that get left out are not the team that we're going to win the national championship anyways.
Exactly. Before we keep going, got to show some love to our sponsor. That is Academy, and that is Jordan. Academy Sports and Outdoors is your new home for Jordan. Gear up today and take flight on the court, off the court, and above the court. Unleash your greatness with head-to-toe Jordan gear for the entire family. Available in-store and at academy.com. Elevated styles and shoes for everyone. Unstoppable value every day. Plus, Academy offers easy ways to shop and save time, like free one-hour in-store or curbside pickup on academy.com orders. Or you can choose same-day delivery powered by DoorDash, where if you order by 4, you can get it by 8. Check out the full Jordan selection today at Academy Sports and Outdoors. One of the things, this is all about off-field stuff. Of course, the team does report this weekend. And Steve Sarkisian, this still is an opportunity. I think it's the second time media kind of in general got to sit down and speak with him. I know he's done some interviews since spring has ended. But one of the things that he talked about, was there a position that surprised you maybe in the development that it made and the position that he chose and doted over a little bit were the linebackers?
Yeah, we rated them pretty highly on the power rankings after spring. But, you know, if you talk about a surprise, I guess we have to be surprised a little bit because we went into the spring talking a lot about Trey Moore's move to linebacker. And about a week or a week and a half in, we were talking about Brad Spence pretty much every practice. That was a big surprise for me. We knew Brad Spence was very good coming off the edge. He's strong at the point of attack. He's a good rusher, a good blitzer. But, you know, we were hearing about him playing good in coverage, and that was unexpected. Leonga Lafau, you know, I'm not surprised by that. He got very important snaps last year that are only going to, enhance his development. Anthony Hill, known commodity. Anthony Smith is a baller. He just has to wait his time. And then you do have Trey Moore moonlighting between linebacker and edge. So I'm not surprised. That's a very deep and talented. It's not, I wouldn't say deep, but there's no dead weight other than Bo Barnes, who's still learning how to play in college. I mean, that's a huge step up at that position. Everybody's going to be a contributor in some way, some fashion. You've got Ty Anthony Smith probably has a first or second round, I'll say second round NFL upside, and he's going to have to scratch and claw for snaps this year just because of the guys ahead of him.
Yeah, and Sark made sure to mention guys like Smith and Barnes by name. Like he almost went over the whole room. Jonathan Cunningham doing a little bit different stuff as he starts his career, but he mentioned Bo, he mentioned Spence, he mentioned Ty Anthony Smith, and it's one of those things where you look at and you feel – pretty confident about not just this upcoming year with Anthony Hill and with Leonga and Trey Moore, Brad Spence, but even in the coming years as well. Still some work to do on the recruiting trail, but as far as on the team right now, Johnny Nansen.
Johnny needs to use this year to really springboard his way into recruiting and land some dogs. But it's one of the positions that you do feel good about into the future, even understanding that Anthony Hill is gone after this year. Assuming you get Spence and Leonga back, I mean, that you're still one of the top linebacker cores in the country with Ty Anthony playing a lot. And Bo Barnes, we mentioned his name, the more spring wore on, which speaks to his development about getting interceptions, being in the right place at the right time, following coach instructions and paying off. So that room is stacked, but a lot of them are stacked. We could probably do a whole show talking about each position in a very glowing fashion as well.
should be a lot of fun. Team comes back this weekend, so workouts and the like will start. Nick Townsend, Devin Coleman, Jordan Coleman, all the portal guys are making their way. Awesome. Jonah Williams still going through baseball. They start today. Maybe they're going on right now, so that should be a lot of fun to watch. And then we get camps, and Justin and I will talk about all the different camps, 2026 and 2027 prospects making their way. And this is a fun time where junior quarterback recruiting picks up as well. So real great time to come join Inside Texas. So make sure you head to InsideTexas.com. And we'll also be talking about it here on the YouTube channel. So make sure you like and subscribe. Eric, thank you. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next time on Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.